Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In Season 2, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for His purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do His will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
We hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for His purpose. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of Taming Tribulation. In Episode 2, we finished off reading the story of David in 1 Samuel, verse 58. So today we're continuing on in chapter 18. What we're reading about today is the aftermath of David killing Goliath. David just killed Goliath, cut off his head, came back to Saul's tent, and now Saul is finding out who this young man is. So to start this episode, we're starting in chapter 18, and we're only reading up until verse 12. Then after that, we're going to skip ahead to chapter 19, because that's really the point that we want to get to in this episode. Starting in chapter 18, 1 Samuel. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and his belt. Just so the listener knows, Jonathan is the son of Saul. Now in verse 5, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the woman came out from all the towns in Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, and with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. So the reason that I started in chapter 18 is because what I want to emphasize to the listener here is why Saul is so angry with David. If you can imagine a king that has as much power as Saul and was one day chosen from God, had all of these victories, all of these wars and other tribes that he had beaten. And now another young man has killed the giant. He's the hero now. And as he's strolling into town, all of the women that normally praise your name are praising his and singing. Yeah, Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain even more, tens of thousands. So this is where Saul really starts to get jealous of David and want to kill him. So now skipping through verse 12 to 30 and starting in chapter 19, as Saul tries to kill David. So Jeremy, before I move on, what do you think about that story where David comes into town? Like, what comes to your mind?
I mean, what comes to my mind is that the people gained favor for David. I think people who essentially found out about slaying the giant then gave favor. But I think what's really important about this is the relationship David has with his son, with Saul's son, Jonathan. It's not like he gave him his sword. He gave him his clothes. He gave him his bow. That's not something that should be taken lightly. I think he gained favor with David. They became best friends. And to give someone your sword, and you can imagine this is the king's son's sword. So right. You can imagine that, like, that's probably like wicked. It's probably like one of the best made swords in the entire kingdom.
Yeah, probably got like diamonds in it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like it he gave him his sword. He said, like, he essentially was just like, this is for you. I put my trust and my life in front of you. And they're best friends, right? I think that is just wild to me, to see someone have that type of camaraderie with someone. It reminds me of like being at war with people, the type of like relationships you develop when you experience those type of things. And I think that's really important to bring up, that type of relationship. They're best friends. They're best friends.
And from somebody that's actually been to war, and you can assume that these guys had, obviously they've been friends for a while. They didn't just meet. So they've obviously had some experiences together. You're right. They probably had that kind of friendship where they had done a lot of dangerous things with each other and for each other. And that's why they were so close, because obviously Jonathan had to have a pretty deep reason to want to pick this guy over his own father, who was king, right?
Of course. And his father too. Like, this is where it brings back to humanity, right? When we go back and we talk about why people wanted a king and they gave him Saul. But like in verse 8, Saul was very angry, and he was just like frustrated at the fact that the people were saying David is essentially higher than him. And it brings you back to the mentality of like God saying, like, you don't need a king. Like, I'm your king. But it just shows the humanity of Saul. And it shows that, like, man, he's losing his power. And men get frustrated and do silly things when they lose power.
Yeah. You know, yeah, they do desperate things.
Yeah. And it says in verse 9, you know, as time, you know, continued on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. Right. A jealous eye. Like, it's just
Things changed very quickly, right? From, oh, who is this young guy that just saved us from this army, to, oh, he's going to take everything from me, right? And now it has nothing to do with the success of Israel. It only has to do with your own power, and you'll do anything you can to hold on to it, right? And that switch happens pretty quickly in one verse, really, right?
Like, it does. Yeah. And it's just remarkable. It's remarkable because, like, it's kind of like he completely forgot. Like, I forgot that I could have been enslaved. I could have had my kingdom taken from me. You know, I could have been murdered. My
head could have been chopped off.
Yeah.
Right.
But today,
saved all of us.
Yeah. It's wild. And then today he's like, oh, I'm going to keep a glaring eye on him. Like, okay, bro. Do what you got to do.
Yeah. Seriously. No wonder things turned out for him the way they did. Right. But no spoilers yet. So starting in chapter 19. Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath: "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." Tell us what's going on here, Jeremy. Why is Saul taking this oath? It seems like an awfully weird part of the story for him to
I think he's just trying to cover up his own sin, right? I think he's trying to cover up his jealousy. He's trying to cover up his anger. He's trying to gain trust in his son. But yeah, I don't know. It's wild to me how he would say that. Like, that's the only thing I can think of why he would actually want to quote that. You know, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." I don't know. It just reminds me that it makes me think that he's probably just trying to cover up his own lies and his sin.
Yeah. And it seems also that, like, you know, Saul has also chosen his loyalties now. He's decided, okay, I'm so intent on killing David that I'll lie to my son. My son has just told me, "Listen, this is what I think about this guy. You trust me, and I want you to take an oath to promise that you won't kill this guy." And so the father's like, okay, number one, I don't care about the meaning of an oath. Number two, I want to kill David. And number three, I don't care if I lie to my son. So I'm an oath breaker, a murderer, and a liar to my family. And we're only starting the story.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not a good, not a good start for Saul. And it just another check on the box of this guy is not somebody that should be king.
Exactly. It's 100% true. And it's remarkable to me how the deeper you get into sin, the more difficult it is to
get out.
Hide your sin or get out. Yeah. Cause you're so like neck deep into it. It's like, why shouldn't people lie? Because you got to lie about the lie, you know? And it's just like, okay, well, you're just going to end up tripping over yourself eventually, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so starting in verse 7. So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Once more, war broke out, and David went out and fought the Philistines. He struck them with such force that they fled before him. But an evil spirit from the Lord came on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand. While David was playing the lyre, Saul tried to pin him to the wall with his spear, but David eluded him as Saul drove the spear into the wall. That night, David made good his escape. Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through a window, and he fled and escaped. Then Michal took an idol, laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment, and putting some goat's hair at the head. When Saul sent the men to capture David, Michal said, "He is ill." Then Saul sent the men back to see David and told them, "Bring him up to me in his bed so that I may kill him." But when the men entered, there was the idol in the bed, and at the head was some goat's hair. Saul said to Michal, "Why did you deceive me like this and send my enemy away so that he escaped?" Michal told him, "He said to me, 'Let me get away. Why should I kill you?'" This is a part of the story that it jumps out to me because it's like very imaginative, right? It's very visual. The whole thing is David realizes what happens. Okay, I gotta escape. How am I gonna get out of here? His wife, okay, I'll put an idol under the bed. I'll put an idol under the sheets. They'll come in and I'll say you're ill and that'll buy us some time. And then, he has to sneak away. Go in the night. And just what a scene that is, right? Like it was like from a movie. They come in and start stabbing the thing in the bed, and it's nothing there. And now Saul's son and daughter have both turned away from him towards David, his son that he trusts enough to have him as an heir. And Saul wanted Michal, his daughter, to marry David, so he obviously trusted her. And now both of these people, both of his children, have turned away from him and towards David. So what that says to me is what kind of favor David has from God, and that Saul is just continuously losing all the people loyal to him and all the blessings God gave him. What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, no, it's very simple. God, he's losing God's favor. I think he's separated. I think God's essentially saying like, "Hey, I'm done with you." Like, you've done what you've done, and your children, your own children, are turning against you. And I think that just happens when you essentially give up on God. And I think about this too. It's like, I immediately thought of like the scene from Lord of the Rings, when the,
me too,
they come in there with the swords and they just stab the beds and try to kill the hobbits. Right. And I'm sitting here just like, well, he got so angry at his own daughter, and like, it just shows like the spirit's not around him anymore. You know what I mean? Like he's just not in favor of God. He's so angry, and it's just evidential. You know what I mean? People see it.
Starting in verse 18, when David had fled and made his escape, he went to Samuel at Ramah and told him that Saul had done and told him all that Saul had done to him. Then he and Samuel went to Naioth and stayed there. Word came to Saul, "David is in Naioth at Ramah." So he sent men to capture him. But when they saw a group of prophets prophesying, with Samuel standing there as the leader, the Spirit of God came on Saul's men, and they also prophesied. Saul was told about it, and he sent more men. They prophesied also. Saul sent men a third time, and they prophesied. Finally, he himself left for Ramah and went to a great cistern at Seku. And he said, "Where are Samuel and David?" "Over at Naioth and Ramah," they said. So Saul went to Naioth and Ramah, but the Spirit of God came even on him, and he walked along prophesying until he came to Naioth. He stripped off his garments, and he too prophesied in Samuel's presence. He lay naked all that day and all that night. This is why the people say, is Saul also among the prophets? So David escapes, gets away, and goes to this prophet that he knows will keep him safe. Saul hears where he went, keeps sending men to go and kill him. And, you know, we weren't around 2,000 years ago. I've never seen anybody or certainly a group of people prophesying. But the best thing I can imagine is it's quite a unique scene, and that in today's world it would be something we'd call for crazy people. But back then, people prophesied. So David goes to this place. Saul tries to come and find him. Every time Saul sends anybody to go there, they start prophesying too. And it's like God just saying, okay, send anybody you want. I'm not going to let you kill him. And he's not going to have to run anymore. I'm just going to change your desire once you get here. And so just another part of the story where men are completely powerless when it comes to what God wants, right? And you can have your own desire, but God's going to do what he wants. And even if that means putting spirits on you, right? And there's nothing you can do over what God wants. That's what jumps out here to me in that story. What jumps out to you, Jeremy?
No, I would think exactly the same thing. I think when you try to essentially go and do things that is your way, there's always a way that gets stopped or revealed or brought into the light. And that's, I think, essentially what happened here. Like you guys, I'm going to send men to come get you. And the men are useless because they're sitting there probably going through some type of event. They're incapable of essentially killing David in that moment. And then he sends more and more and more. And then he's finally like, all right, I'm going to go. And then, like, once again, stopped and incapable of doing it, which I think is actually hilarious. But yeah.
Yeah, that's more of a funny part of the story, honestly. Like, yeah. So many parts of the story are like a little scary. You can imagine Saul throwing the spear at David and just missing him, spear going into the wall, and David realizing, I got to get out of here. You know, and it's just his life is constantly in danger. And then in this one, it's like, okay, so they show up and start prophesying and get naked and lay on the ground. Like, that's quite a thing to do when you're trying to kill somebody. You're not really completing your mission. So just how there's no limit to what God will do to make it so that what he wants done, right?
You know, we always hear about these stories, but we never really hear the little intricate details. Until you get into the word and you start reading all the little details, you're kind of like, yeah, like there's so many different ways that God intervenes in the lives of people. Yeah. And I just love how it's like, yeah, you go from Goliath to he's on the run to, okay, what's next? He finally like forgives his enemies. You know, you kind of like, if you try to summarize the story of David and how he's on the run, you skip all these little intricate parts. And I just think it's just a good reminder of like how many times God intervenes in what he believes is what God's way actually is. So I think it's brilliant.
Okay, so we will stop this episode there. We're stopping at chapter 20. Next week, we will continue on with the story of David. We hope you're enjoying season 2 so far. Have a great day, everybody.